When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion. Yes, in 2023, we are still the podcast that is cataloging, chronicling, opening, touching, and feeling all of the wonderful physical media put out by the incredible boutique Blu-ray label in Australia, Imprint Films. I am one half of your curatorial partnership, Blake Howard. In a darkened movie library of his own today is the one and only Alexi Toliopoulos.
Blake, it is my joy and pleasure to be joining you once again to talk about these Blu-rays from Imprint Films. This is a bit of a catch-up episode. This is catch-up on our November episode from last year.
We are playing a fast and furious catch-up because there is so much stuff that has been released over our kind of Christmas break in Australia.
Yes.
We've taken a bit of a hiatus. If you know Alexi from the Finding series, Finding Drago, Finding Desperado, Finding Jesus on the YouTubes, and also Total Reboot, he's taken a bit of a hiatus. I've taken a little bit of a hiatus, so we haven't been back together. If you want to join our Patreon, you can jump on and check out our discoveries of last year, including a cheeky Imprint chucked in there. But we've had a bit of a hiatus. We're catching the rest of the November batch. We have a December haul and a February haul that we're going to catch up in probably successive weeks. We'll be back talking about this, but we didn't want to miss, because we were kind of gushing about the incredible After Dark Neo-Noir Cinema Volume 2, which we both contributed essays to. We thought we should pick up the pieces of the rest of that batch, and we cherry-picked five films from both the Roland Joffé box set and others that are in that batch to talk about with you guys. But, man, there has been so much and so much great shit that we're like, we can't miss it. We got to catch it up.
I will probably say this on the record. This batch with the Neo-Noir box set included is probably the all-time greatest batch. It is pretty spectacular. There are a few others scant here and there, big additions in batches. Like, of course, I'm a big fan of the Warriors release we had last year, the Wicker Man box set that we had last year. Oof. But I'd say pound for pound, there are some real classics, cult classics, and interesting movies in this batch. We talked about the big noir, neo-noir box set already last year. We gushed over it. I think it's one of the best box sets I freaking have ever owned. It is film school in a box. It's a genre study in a box. But the surrounding releases in this batch, this November batch from Imprint Films, is pretty freaking stellar. I don't even know where to begin, but perhaps should we discuss this other big box set that came out in this release window as well?
Let's do it. Directed by Roland Joffé, the 1984 to 92 section of his career, and including actually has a documentary, a feature-length doco that was produced in 2002 that's about this period of his career. But it's an incredible box set as well. It features The Killing Fields, which is one of his most critically lauded films of all time. It features The Mission, which is an absolute stone-cold classic, which we're going to talk about today. It features 1988's Fat Man and Little Boy. Now, if you don't know that, I mean, you're going to want to hear us talk about it because it's essentially freaking Oppenheimer. And then we've got City of Joy in there as well. It's a banger collection. And I'm loving Lex, a filmmaker box sets. Like, if you just say it's X filmmaker from X years, I'm like, as a registered cinephile, as you say, it's like, I love just going chronologically through a director. I'll take his wins with his losses. I'll take his big swings for his more conservatives. I just want to get that feel. And we had that terrific Jim Sheridan box set that was kind of around this at the same time. So it's just another one of these. And then, of course, the collaborations box set, which the Zhang Yimou box set, which is peerless, I think, in the entire collection. I'm loving this from Imprint. More of this. Like, so many directors get underdone. Multiple studios, bloody blah, but this was a banger, and we're going to talk about two of the films contained within.
I really think that these box sets from Imprint, like you were saying, they're such clever curatorial pieces, really. I think that they're such great ways to put a box set together to have either a specific period or a specific tone. With the Zhang Yimou, we had their collaborations with Gong Li. With the Jim Sheridan one, it was specifically the Irish films of Jim Sheridan. And now with Roland Joffé, it's like it's a time period set one. And I think that these films together, they are kind of like, they work together because they are kind of like these socio-political films that are kind of speaking to some kind of cultural aspect, to some kind of historical significance. He's like a documenter of history through like narrative period films. I am a little bit familiar with some of the films in here. I'd seen The Mission quite a few times in my life because it is like this known as a classic. It's mainly known in Australia for sure. I actually don't know about its reputation overseas, but its score has continuously been the number one score in ABC Classics 100 scores. Like over the years, it comes back, always is the number one, which for a film that is not completely known as like an unimpeachable classic, the way stuff like The Godfather or even other Morricone scores like The Good, The Bad and The Ugly, for it to kind of retain that top spot, to even be in the top 10, I think is pretty... It speaks to the quality of this score and how it connects to people through popular culture and through the culture.
Yeah, it's one of those weird ones where in Australia specifically, it's kind of omnipresent because Australian classic, you know, AM radio, you kind of flick the dial, and back in the day, you're like literally flicking the tubes, you know, the little buttons on your grandparents' car as you're driving around. And it was ubiquitous. Like from the time that it came out, it was like the entire memory of my entire life. I can remember this soundtrack playing. All right. From the back of the box itself, it reads, deep in the jungles of South America, two men bring God to a native tribe. One Jesuit missionary, the other a reformed slave trader. After years of struggle together, they find themselves faced with the agonizing choice: obey papal dictate and abandon the mission, or remain to defend the Indians they cherish. This is a terrific flick. It is stacked with special features, new making of the mission, documentaries talking about the making of Ennio Morricone's score. This is a fresh one. Yeah. We've got Lives in the Balance, Chris really Menges, good. Who's the cinematographer. We've got legacy interviews with both Jeremy Irons and Roland Joffe. And then there is a Making of the Mission doco from the BBC series Omnibus back in 1986 when it was made. Lex, talk to me about this incredible film and really a titanic Robert De Niro performance.
Well, let's start there. That De Niro performance. I have seen this movie quite a few times. Rewatching it, I probably was not as encapsulated by it as I have been in the past. I think because, you know, I am so familiar with that score now. Like, the score and the cinematography are what kind of drive this movie, and I think why it has any kind of strong reputation. But to me, it was the total rediscovery of Robert De Niro's performance, because it is one of his most complex characters, because it is like this almost mythological archetype come to life. It is almost like that Barabbas, but he brings a humanity to that kind of character that is so... It's like that authenticity that De Niro brings, that really like charged, ferocious authenticity. And there's that calm steadiness that like that covers that like strong anger. And I think it just works so well in this performance of someone forced to find their redemption. And I think it is one of his most underrated performances, coming back to this one. I really, really think it should be held in the same kind of high regard as his best work of this like 1980s period. I think it's really fantastic.
Yeah, he has a weird and wonderful patch in his career in this 1980s period. So he has so many films on his resume, but when you go back to this period, you've kind of got 78 is Deer Hunter, then you've got 80 Raging Bull, True Confessions 81, King of Comedy 82, Once Upon a Time in America 84, Falling in Love 84, Brazil 85, and then he goes The Mission 86, Angel Heart 87, Untouchables 87, and Midnight Run 88. Yeah. It's like, it is a wild, like, diverse, incredible bunch of performances. And this one seems to have been dwarfed around other more, I guess, commercial enterprises. Yeah, flashy stuff.
Yeah. Also, because I think it's like a rare supporting turn for him. Like in this era, there's a couple, but it's also not a showy performance the way that something like, his Al Capone in The Untouchables is, or like the showstopper that he is in freaking Angel Heart the very next year. I think because this is kind of like, it's intense and it is quite huge, but it's like a measured support. It's like a true supporting performance, really.
Yes. Yeah. I think when I think about The Mission, I think about a man who is doing everything to suffocate his impulses. And so I think that's what's great, is because De Niro is such an intuitive and impulsive performer. And what I think that Roland Joffe gets out of him here, and I think why he speaks so highly of the performance to this day, is that he is having to restrain his impulses and restrain his fury. And it's the ability for the character to do that really well, and where that, and where it, you know, the ecosystem or the equilibrium of the entire film really hangs in the balance of his ability to not be violent. But it's that caged lion that is just waiting to burst out and ruin everything. And I think that that's it's just one tiny element in this gargantuan epic that I think is so stunning. And it's just kind of bravura filmmaking top to bottom. It's got that Werner Herzog kind of feel about it.
Fitzcarraldo type. Yeah, like that epic undertaking. It's weird because I think I was less enamored by watching it now, but talking about it, I just go, yeah, there is something quite special about the mission. But I also think that since then there are movies. Well, the one that I'm thinking about in particular is Silence. That I think does what the mission is attempting to do really successfully, and it is a little bit hard to go back to the mission, but there is plenty to reward you there. It is well known for a reason. Like, that score is so transportive. It's one that I do recommend people catch up with.
And there are shots, you know, we're talking about a brilliant Blu-ray transfer. There are shots in the mission that still to this day, just even sequences that, like, you put it on and it's almost like the only thing that this would make this like an undeniable individual kind of 4K or Blu-ray upgrade if you've got it already in your collection is, like, I would love just a score version, like a silent film version of this, where you're like, you just put it on and the score could be playing and you could just be overwhelmed by the shots. Because I think that's, you're so right. It's the cinematography, it's the direction, it's the setting. It's just this kind of like overwhelming experience, but it's really terrific and really beautiful.
One thing that I noticed rewatching this was the actor Chuck Lowe, who we know as Maury from Goodfellas. He pops up in like King of Comedy and a few of those other films of like De Niro's, because he was, I believe, De Niro's real estate agent at the time, and he kind of wanted to do like some character actor stuff. In this film, he's dubbed by the great Fred Melamed from A Serious Man and stuff, because I just don't think he could do the accent necessary for that character. I think that was something that I noticed this time. I was going like, oh wow, that's not the voice coming out of his head. That's someone else doing ADR.
Well, let's have a look at what Chuck Lowe has done. Only really acted up until like 2003, did an episode of The Sopranos, was in The Sleepers, was in Sleepers, was in The Mission, was in Once Upon a Time in America, was in The King of Comedy. His Titanic performance is Maurice Kessler, in Goodfellas. That's actually like sensational because he's vain and he's so disgusting funny. And he's so funny. Man, what a career. That's a funny, I did not know that. He was an actor. Rest in peace, Chuck Lowe. He passed away in, he was born in 1928. Holy shit. Passed away in 2017. My God. All right. Well, from something Titanic to something atomic.
The biggest stick in the playground. And I intend to do that.
Academy Award winner Paul Newman heads an all-star cast in this powerful true story about the people who created the atomic bomb.
There is one word that I don't want to hear. And that's the word impossible.
I can't do it.
The entire project is beginning to unravel.
Gotta come down out of the cloud, gentlemen, and get into the business of winning a war.
Let's take a quick break so you can hear from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Next up, we're going to talk about another one of that we've cherry-picked out of this Roland Joffe box set, partially because I had never seen it. Lex, I don't think, has seen it yet, but I wanted to talk with you guys about it. Fat Man and Little Boy in the remote desert of New Mexico. The Manhattan Project is materializing. World War II effort to build the atomic bomb. General Leslie Groves is the military man in charge of a massive project that will produce two weapons, Fat Man and Little Boy. The film is scored again by Ennio Morricone. It's shot by the incredible and famous cinematographer Vilmos Zsigmond, and it stars, listen to this cast, Paul Newman, Dwight Schultz, Bonnie Bedelia, John Cusack, Laura Dern, and John C. McGinley. And I really wanted to watch this because I'd never heard of it, and I chucked it on, and I was like, holy shit, this is Roland Joffe doing a kind of Oppenheimer film. Well, in advance of anyone actually being fascinated with Oppenheimer as a character, Paul Newman plays this sort of gruff, very deeply political animal, kind of General Leslie R. Groves, who's commissioned to do this secret scientific, you know, sort of getaway, if you like, away from everyone. Dwight Schultz plays J. Oppenheimer. And it's about these guys trying to get together in amongst the secrecy of all of the American military to create this weapon. And it does its dance with the moral quandary of creating these weapons that are going to do unbelievable and unfathomable damage to human life. And also dances around the fact that that Japan had essentially already surrendered and the Americans went and bombed them anyway because they wanted to test this weaponry out and, I guess, establish themselves as the lone remaining superpower in the world. Obviously, Russia is hanging around there, the USSR, but it's a really fascinating, interesting little film. John Cusack is essentially the narrator of the film. He's talking about the experiences. It's kind of like, feels like diary entries, very documentarian-esque. And it struck me as like, it's very kind of classic. It's still kind of old world. It hasn't really aged as gracefully as you might have thought, but man, I was like so glad to see this because it's like, this is such ripe territory. You can see why Christopher Nolan is fascinated with Oppenheimer as a character and the moral quandary and digging deeper into that. This does a little bit more diffusion. It's focused a little bit on General Leslie Groves as Paul Newman. It's focused on Cusack. It's focused on, you know, John C. McGinley, who's just happens to be a scientist who hangs around with a chimp. It focuses on Oppenheimer's relationships as well, especially with a woman who has connections with the Communist Party. So it does like give you these little dalliances. It's not completely executed in, I think, the same effortless way as like maybe The Mission or The Killing Fields. But man, you can tell that Joffe is like that kind of, I don't know whether it's like intuition or something. He's just got this real talent, Lex, for finding these historical places to explore the corners and to myth bust. And I really enjoyed the myth-busting aspect of it because it did not feel rah-rah. It felt very kind of complex, complicated, and definitely was comfortable in the uncomfortability, that is even a word, of of what these people actually create and the burden of that creation. So it's like scientific perfection and excellence, but at what cost, moral or otherwise. So very fascinating little flick. And so I would definitely recommend, if those folks out there who are frothing Oppenheimer teasers, trailers, you're in the States, you've seen the IMAX stuff, and you need to get a little bit of a fix of what this story is about, Roland Joffe did it. He did it all the way back in 1989, and has a very kind of desperate turn from Paul Newman at a time where he really started to feel himself as an older actor.
Yeah, wow. So interesting. We've had a great little Paul Newman dalliance with the Imprint Films. I would also say in this box set, I didn't get a chance to catch up with it. I've seen it before back when I was a teenager working at the video store. But The Killing Fields probably is the best film in this box set. It's a Definitely. Really great historical film that... if that is your kind of bag, it is like a no-brainer. If you like those kind of like historical epics, especially in those kind of like war-adjacent genres, it's a fantastic film that people should catch up with.
Absolutely. Now, Lex, can you take me back to school?
And we judge ourselves by the highest standards.
Dylan takes it. Right draw. Follow Chesty up the hole. On two.
Right!
Good grades, the right schools, the right colleges, the right connections. Those are the keys to the kingdom.
You're so different from the other boys.
How's that?
You have a serious side.
Girls, eat your hearts out.
Oh no! Never mess with my hair. I can't believe you did that.
Thanks for taking care of my girl.
Stop saying that. I'm not your girl.
What the hell is this?
Yeah, it turns out our golden boy here is a lying, backstabbing kite.
You twat! Kike! You son of a bitch!
You think the Jews are dirt, right?
It would be my pleasure to take you back to school via the mind of one of the great TV creators of all time, Mr. Dick Wolf, with the 1992 film School Ties. After receiving a scholarship to an exclusive prep school, working class teen David Green, played by Brendan Fraser, becomes a star athlete and wins the attention of a beautiful debutante. But the ties of his newfound friendships are broken when a student reveals the secret David has tried to conceal. He is Jewish. Now, David must take the most important stand of his life, one that will touch the lives of many and forever change the course of his future. This film has such an incredible cast. It stars Brendan Fraser. It's one of his earliest leading roles, and it's an all-star cast following him, including Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Chris O'Donnell, amongst many of their other peers of that era. It is an interesting little melodrama. Blake, did you have a chance to catch up with this one yet?
I have never seen School Ties. I'm so disappointed that I haven't had a chance to check it out. It's got a audio commentary by a friend of our show's, Jimmy Hemphill, who's one of the best Q&A moderators, film historians going around in the greater Los Angeles area. And he's done a brand new director's commentary for this. He did another commentary track to Nobody's Fool, which is fantastic. Oh, absolutely great. Fantastic as well. So I haven't seen it. And it's like one of those ones that I missed. It's kind of like, it was in that time of like Sleepers and Dead Poet. It's like, it's the bookends of Sleepers and Dead Poet Society, and School Ties fit right in the middle. And I missed it, and I still miss it. And I was excited that it's in the batch, and I'm holding the box in my hand as we're talking, but I'm like, haven't seen it yet, but I would love to get your opinion on it, because if there's no way to nudge me towards a movie that if there's an Alexi Toliopoulos recommendation.
This one is really weird. It's an odd film. It's quite interesting. For me, I'm a big Dick Wolf fan. Like, I love Law and Order.
You've been known as a Dick Wolf.
I have been known. I have been known to howl at the dickhead all the time. This comes out like just at the dawn of Law and Order, a couple years into that original series run. And mostly this film is pretty daggy, but then there are like these moments and passages that feel so magically stripped from the past of like those Douglas Sirk melodramas or those social message cinema classics from Stanley Kramer. Like it really, it has those moments where you're just like, I'm watching a film from this 1950s period. Like they capture the look of those films so perfectly at times. That's just completely transportive. And there's this kind of like wavering appreciation that I had while watching this film. And that even really applies to like those aesthetic moments as well, where just like there's times where this just looks like a TV drama. Like it's got coverage of a TV drama, but then there's some shots and some wides and some establishing moments, some details where it's like, holy shit, I'm transported back to like this much earlier in the 20th century period of filmmaking. And so he genuinely is a really interesting period piece. Like it truly kept surprising me. And I think it's interesting to go back and watch this one now because Brendan Fraser, he is the man of the moment. He's likely to be on the verge of winning an Oscar right now for his performance in The Whale. So it is kind of nice to go back and watch some of his lesser appreciated work as an actor, because I think when we think of Brendan Fraser, we think about the movie star Brendan Fraser that we once had, which of course it's The Mummy, iconic, fantastic performance, one of the best of its kind. Then we've got some great performances in Bedazzle that are more comedic, George of the Jungle, those
George
kind
of the
movies.
Jungle, deeply, deeply underrated comedy. Very funny.
I loved it, but I haven't seen it since I was like 7 years old, so I can't really speak to it. There are these smaller films, these great performances from him, and I think this is almost chief among them because he is so young in it. But I'm also thinking of like Gods and Monsters and of course The Quiet American, where I think he even outacts freaking Michael Caine in his Oscar nominated role in that. But he's just really superb as like this gentle character that is like against these odds in this like kind of fish out of water world. He's really, really sensitive, really, really powerful, and he utilizes like all his skills in this one in a really nice way. And he's just a wonderful presence. And Matt Damon is one of cinema's most conniving little fucking rats. And he is great in this movie. He just is one of the great rats. And I think it's like a surprise. You think of him as a bit of a cipher.
But then when
he does some rat shit, you're like, fuck, you're one of the greatest rats, man.
That's 100 out of 100, 10 out of 10, 5-star Alexi is one of the cinema's greatest fucking rats. God,
he is one
that.
Of the greatest fucking rats, man. Whenever you see him do rat shit, like The Departed, like the Interstellar, like this is the real rat shit from him.
The freaking Talented Mr. Ripley. The rattiest fuck. He's fantastic. I also love that Matt Damon is willing to surrender to be the rat. There's a lot of guys who have got too much ego, and he's absolutely fantastic. Wow, that's a huge recommendation, putting it to the top of my pile. But before, like, we only have two movies left, and when I was thinking about which ones we should talk about, I have to immediately, before we lose the momentum of this amazing podcast, I have to get you to introduce the audience to the fabulous Staines.
On lead guitar, depleted. On bass, Dizzy Heights.
Ta-da!
We're the Staines, and we're gonna put out.
You just can't be a gimmick.
I'm not a gimmick. Who knows when your turn will be? Who knows when your turn will be? Who knows when your turn will be?
Some people think girls can't be rock and rollers.
Well, I'm talking about the power television has to create.
Those girls created themselves.
She said things that I've always wanted to say, and I haven't been able to.
I think every citizen should be given an electric guitar on her 16th birthday.
Sucker!
Ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Staines. Corinne Burns, Diane Lane, is a typical frustrated teenager living in a nowhere town until she catches punk band The Looters. Bewitched by the whole punk scene, she and her fledgling band, The Staines, join the tour and in no time at all become media magnates. The band forms a rabid following of young girls while Corinne begins a relationship with Looters singer Billy, played by, of all people, Ray Winston. As The Staines gets bigger and bigger.
Hotter than he's ever been in his life in this movie.
Yeah, I love Ray Winston. As The Staines get bigger and bigger, however, Corinne's ambitions get the better of her. Ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Staines never received a formal theatrical release and was only seen on late-night cable, poor-quality bootlegs, or on rare occasions at film festivals. Yet somehow, this 1981 film about a trio of misfit teenage girls who start a punk band went on to inspire a generation of female rockers. It stars Diane Lane, Ray Winston, Peter Donat, Laura Dern, and perhaps my favourite character actor in the whole movie. There is this incredible monologue by Christine Lardy that is just one of the most stunning moments of pathos. I think that this is a fantastic movie. I was lucky enough to see in the cinema a couple of years ago. The great film curator Kate Jinks from the See Also podcast put it on at the Golden Age Cinema, one of her favorites as well. And she and her podcast partner, Brody Lancaster, just did a huge episode on, ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Staines on See Also, which I would highly recommend as a companion piece to this movie. Blake, you saw this for the first time, catching up with this batch.
It was absolutely sensational, Lex. You were not wrong. Incredible performances. I heard a great quote today from the filmmaker Roger Avery, actually, on his podcast, the Video Archives podcast with Quentin Tarantino, and they talked about 70s movies being so cheap, especially around the Roger Corman era, that they were so cheap that they were more reflective of society and the things going on in whether it's different cities or suburbia or whatever, because they didn't have the money to dress it up and cover up the things that they wanted to. And that quote immediately kind of got me enraptured even more thinking about The Fabulous Staines, because it just feels the textures of this time and of this kind of band life and the way that the media interacts with them and the way that, I guess, the milieu of like this dissatisfied kind of early 80s Gen X youth, you know, movement, it just was unbelievable. I was staggered by it. I was watching it. It looks fantastic. The performances are fantastic. Diane Lane is uncompromising and ferocious and impulsive as Corinne. She's so sensational. Laura Dern, Jess McNeil, who's like her best bud, is like super powerful in that. And Ray Winston, as I couldn't even help myself. I had to interrupt you mid-synopsis because I was like blown away by just how beautiful Ray Winston was, how charming he was, how much his accent and that punk rocker ethos just like dripped out of his pores. Man, this movie is sensational. It's like as I can say, as an acolyte of Josie and the Pussycats, as an acolyte of like band movies, just in general, this is such a sensational, fictionalized band. It has such a great story. It's like the movie that Rockstar wishes it was. It's the movie that a lot of these fictional narrativized movies wish they could be. And I just loved every bit of it, every frame of it. I had such a fun time with these characters. And I was like, this is a total unheralded masterpiece. And the fact that Imprint Films have finally got it for people to see in a wholesale way, it's not part of a box set, you buy it as this beautiful Blu-ray. I'm so excited to see it again, and so excited to share it again. I love this movie, and you were, you know, right off the bat was like, Blake, this might be one of the best movies in the batch. So I was just thrilled. I thrilled completely.
Yeah, I think it's a great movie. It's messy, but it's the kind of movie that deserves to be messy. It's about that punk culture, and it's an early punk film as well. And it feels like, it almost feels like it's a true story, but it's not. Something like this never happened. It is fantastic. I like that you said that it might be the best in the batch, because I think that the last thing that we're going to discuss is, it's a true cinema classic. It is one of the greats of that breakthrough world cinema, one of the greats in the gangster genre. Blake, why don't you start telling us about Fernando Méryel's City of God? Academy
Awards, including Best Director and Best Adapted Screenplay. Rio de Janeiro, the beach, the nightlife, the romance. But 15 miles from paradise is a place called the City of God. A place where one man must infiltrate a war between two crime lords to tell a story the world needs to know.
In the streets of the world's most notorious slum, Rio de Janeiro's City of God, a frail and scared young boy will grow up to discover that he can view the harsh realities of his surroundings with a different eye. Truly, this 2002 movie was a gateway drug for me in world cinema. I saw it as it was released, and as a guy that was just exiting high school at that time and had had a limited access other than our phenomenal free broadcaster SBS is like world cinema. Seeing City of God and being truly hypnotized and just enraptured by this view of a city and this view of gangster life with this incredible, aesthetically pure and true version of like what gangster life was like from a different cultural perspective. This is one of the best movies. I think it may be one of my, you know, top movies of all time. As far as like first time watches, I love it. And the fact that it hasn't had a really fantastic release is a crime until now. And man, Lex, I can't wait to talk to you about City of God. It's a special, special movie to me.
Yeah, me too. I was obsessed with this film around the like same age as you when I was a teenager. Between 2004, 2009, I reckon I would have watched this film at least a dozen times. It was an instant favorite, a huge inspiration. I don't think I had ever seen a film that had felt like this, something that felt so urgent. And it was like this style that was ablaze, informed by like an inferno of story. I was obsessed with it. I even devoured that spiritual successor TV series, City of Men, which I watched countless and countless times. The follow-up film City of Men as well, I really, really liked. This is just... I couldn't believe like how taken I was, because I think that what is really special about this film, it's like that gangster film that captures that strip from the headlines that the genre begins with, and it makes it feel very tangible. Like there's like this teenage perspective to this movie and like this childhood perspective to this movie that I don't think has ever really been equaled ever or even matched in any kind of way with like that kind of teenage crime. Like there's this roughness, this indifference to violence, the drugs and everything that kind of encroach a young person's existence in this film that just kind of like feels so unending. And especially I was watching it, as were you, like someone who would have been the same age as those characters, and they would have the same wants and dreams and desires that I did, but their story was so different to mine. I just found that going back and watching it on this rewatch, like that really hit me. Like just being like, I discovered this film when I was the same age of the characters. Now I've lived longer than most of the characters in this movie did, because my life just was completely different to them. My circumstances were completely different to them. And just like it kicked me really, really freaking hard. And I watching it, I was taken back to just like sitting in this room, watching it on my tiny little, like probably 15-inch Aldi tube TV. I just think that it's one of the most unexpectedly rewarding and powerful rewatches I've had in quite some time. I just love this movie so much.
Special movie. And it's one of those things where I watched it like countless times when I first saw it. I hadn't seen it in years. And I watched it again. And it's one of those things that it's the most minor trepidation that you have where you've seen a movie and you go, God damn, I hope that it doesn't tarnish the memories that I have, because it was so influential to me.
Mm.
It was so inspirational to me to seek cinema outside. It pushed me into gangster cinema in other parts of the world. It pushed me into one of my other like favorite, like just going on regional explorative, like viewings of different, you know, countries. It pushed me into Iranian cinema, which I'm hugely obsessed with. You know, on completely different tangent, because just the world was bigger after I watched City of God. And yeah. I can't think of, like, you know, it was Matteo Gironi's film from 2008, Gomorrah, which won a Grand Prix prize at Cannes.
I fucking love that movie.
That's the last time that I've seen something like that, that kind of almost was like a similar flavor of City of God, where I was like, I'm watching something that is totally in a genre that I am steeped in, that is doing something completely different at a different pace, at a different tone, at a different setting, with different characters being highlighted. That, and you know, Gomorrah has gone off and spawned different TV series. It was based off a book by Robert Saviano. And so, you know, I would strongly recommend that as a great double feature, as like City of God and Gomorrah, like as these two completely, you know, world cinema, you know, classics of the crime genre. But man, City of God, just a special movie. I haven't seen City of Men in freaking decades, so you've just inspired me to find that again.
I've tracked down the DVDs because it was very hard to find online, and I was able to find the DVDs. I used to have them on DVD too. I could not find my old copies anywhere, so I tracked down the DVDs, and it's just really great. I would also give a shout out to, it is on, let me just double check, it's still on there, but I saw this on Netflix. It's still on there. There's a documentary called City of God 10 Years Later from 2013, which catches up with a lot of the child stars. And it's kind of a tough watch. It's kind of a tough watch because this documentary begins in an area of fascination, catching up with those young amateur actors that brought that authentic lived experience to the now classic film. But unfortunately, this film finds difficulty in carving out its identity or point of view. I'm just reading my old Letterboxd review. It attempts to both be a celebration of the film's success, but also lament the possible exploitation of those young stars. But it just kind of never takes that stance. But there are some of those interviews with the old stars that are just fascinating. Especially the actor that went on to find, there's a few actors that went on to find quite a bit of success, that like going into City of Men, which was a huge show in Brazil. But of course, Sue George, who is in City of God, and then he gets to do the Wes Anderson movie, Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou, becomes quite a major pop music star across the world. Fascinating. I wish it had actually been included on the disc, but it's on Netflix. Anyone can freaking watch it. City of God 10 Years Later. I think it's a really, it's a worthy companion piece after you've watched the film to catch up with that documentary.
Sensational to talk to you, my brother, as always, and get deep on the discs. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Follow everything that I'm doing at One Blake Minute on both Twitter and Instagram, or at One Heat Minute Productions. You're either listening to this in the Imprint companion feed or on our One Heat Minute Productions feed. So you can just hit up oneheatminute.com to find out everything that we are doing, including audio essays, brand new monthly audio essays that are coming out. We've just done one with Ethan Warren on the Fablemans, which was absolutely sensational. I'm super excited for you guys to hear what's coming next.
And you got a big shout out for it in Vulture, which was very exciting to see.
Super exciting indeed. I might even, Lex, could I tease the next audio essay?
Yes.
Let's
and
do it.
No, you may not. You must share it explicitly.
I'm going to tease this. The next audio essay, this is the first time announcing it. Brandon Strasnig, who is a Twitter darling, film Twitter darling.
I really like his shit. He's awesome.
Terrific writer, is coming on to do a special audio essay on Albert Payne's Mean Guns, starring Christopher Lambert and Ice-T, a bit of an unsung masterpiece from action filmmaker. So we have that. Tom Ralston has done our special art again. So thank you to Tom. Excited to share that one. We already have Marches. I'm going to have to keep that one up my sleeve and only tell Lexi about it for you guys. But Lex,
oh, hell yeah.
I'm going to tell you about that. But you guys are completely rebooting, aptly, Total Reboot this year, as you and your lovely co-host, dear friend of yours and a friend of mine, Cam James, are forging ahead on potentially some new finding stuff. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with you.
Oh, so at the moment we're developing something quite big, but you know, that's why I've been taking a little bit of time off from the pods. I can't really say too much about it, but I think, you know, if you're listeners to our podcast, you always know that when Cameron and I take breaks from podcasting, it always means that we're working on something that we're really excited about. So our listeners are very generous with accepting that from us, which is very nice. But we are doing a new podcast later on in the year, probably sooner than we expected as well, where we'll be doing something that's kind of like almost like the B stories to Finding, like stories that will kind of fascinate us and populate that kind of same space as Finding, but in a more casual, relaxed, chatty way. But that'll be in a little while away. In the meantime, I'm going to do a little bit of movie podcasting on the Total Reboot feed pretty soon. I just need to take a little break, decompress while being making this new idea. So stay tuned. Stick around on the Total Reboot feed. There's going to be heaps of stuff in there. Just, you know, have been working on something really all-encompassing recently that has stopped us from getting there. But I want to do some kind of film recommendation poddos on that feed very, very soon.
I'm excited for the film recommendation poddos that are going to pop up on the feed, because I know that, like, truly, Lex's recommendations mean the hell a lot to me. So I'm excited about getting together, maybe having a nice meal, a few drinks. We can watch your film recommendation together, jump on the mics afterwards. That might be a nice little fun evening out.
I've got one for you, Blake, that's going to be really good. I got one for you that I know you have not seen that I think will knock you.
Oh, I can't wait. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you up. This has been the end of the November batch. We're going to pick of the batch for December and then jump headlong into February. So you're going to probably hear us maybe once a week until we catch you up, because Imprint's calendar is absolutely insane. The batch after batch is lining up. So we're going to keep you guys posted on that, as well as jumping over to the Blues Brothers feed over on 1-8-Minute Productions. More reviews of other physical media that is coming out. So we'll keep you posted on that. But thank you for listening. Keep those discs spinning, and we'll catch you on another episode of Companion very, very soon.
I'm Ethan Warren. I'm the author of the book The Cinema of Paul Thomas Anderson, American Apocrypha, coming April 2023 from Columbia University Press. And I'm here to invite you down to Hot Tracks Nightclub, onto the Schooner Golden Fang, into the House of Woodcock and Fat Bernie's Pinball Palace, because coming next spring from One Heat Minute Productions, it's Pod Thomas Anderson.
I have a love in my life. It makes me stronger than anything you can imagine.
I've abandoned my child! I've abandoned my boy!
Starting now, you're not to blink. If you blink, we go back to the start.
I cannot begin my day with a confrontation.
This is fate that brought us together. This is fate.
Throughout this 9-episode audio documentary series, you'll be hearing from me with some excerpts from my book, plus excerpts from my conversations with some fascinating guest voices, including film critics.
My name is Ty Burr.
I'm Cassidy Olson.
My name is Ella Kemp.
Actors, comedians, and podcasters.
My name is Paul Russ.
Hey, I'm John Gabris.
I am Joe Pera.
And so much more. We'll have an episode on each of your PTA favorites. That's right, we're talking Hard Eight.
It's almost impossible to imagine the PTA of this century making anything that looks like this.
We're talking Boogie Nights.
Fuck, it's about family and how you don't find family via birth.
We're talking Magnolia.
I went into the theater, one person. I came out of the theater, a different person and a different moviegoer.
We're talking Punch Drunk Love.
It's kind of like a sweet romance story, but the anger that is underneath is so funny.
We're talking There Will Be Blood.
And you're not prepared for how good it is and how cool it is and how amazing it looks.
We're talking The Master.
There are so many interpretations you could bring to this movie. It's that dense, it's that ambitious.
We're talking Inherent Vice.
Which is layer and layer and layer of both indecipherable corruption, but then also like that corruption can be funny.
We're talking Phantom Thread.
Rarely has it been the case where I have felt that I was in masterful hands from the very first shot.
And we're wrapping it all up with a slice of licorice pizza.
How do you take the statements of your youth, and then how does that fundamentally stay the same, but also kind of soften or change?
So subscribe to One Heat Minute Productions now on your podcasting app of choice. Next spring, you'll be getting all 9 weekly episodes right there. And in the meantime, if you pre-order The Cinema of Paul Thomas Anderson, American Apocrypha today, wherever you get your books, then you'll be a star. A big, bright, shining star.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. Keep your walls and trim protected while you paint with Scotch Blue Painter's Tape. It's designed for use on multiple surfaces and can be removed easily without leaving residue behind. Save big on Scotch Blue Painter's Tape from Menards. Also, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and check out all of our great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.